Blog Talk Radio.
Roll, roll, roll your boat gently down the stream.
Hey, you're not my morning jacket. So you don't hear anything either, huh?
I don't, no.
Well,
technical difficulties here.
Yeah, I clicked play on first light on the song that I want, and it indicates that it's playing. It actually has a counter that it says it's 30 seconds into the song, but it's not playing.
It's playing in the ether, see. So why don't we go into the intro?
Okay, can you... Into the intro it is. hey, everyone. This is Gary, the admin for LL Research, filling in for the show's regular host, Monica Liel. We welcome you to In the Now Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, June 8, 2012. Carla is an author, mystic, seeker, and is the primary channel for LL Research, the organization that she co-founded with Don Elkins in 1970. LL Research has two websites, the first of which is llresearch.org, the archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One Material, interviews, speeches, and more. The second is bringforth.org, LL's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, Tetris, and more. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you would like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. When submitting questions, please remember... So you heard that as well, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, folks, yeah. I see you're going to get a treat here. We have a special introductory song, and Gary would like to play it for you. And then he'll read the rest of his intro. Afterwards.
If the system would like to play it for them,
the
apparently.
Won't play it.
It has a mind.
Don't buy it off, Dave.
No. So I've got another... sentence left here. I'll finish that.
All right.
So I was saying that this is a law of one Q&A, so please try to keep your questions, if you're with us, as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, this is Gary, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. So, Carla, question to you is, would you like to talk about your and Jim's week this past week, or did you want me to play this song that didn't play?
I'd gladly give up my time. How about you, Jim?
Oh, let's hear the song.
I want to hear the song, yes.
Hear the song? Okay. Let's give this whirl again. I click play and...
Oh, my goodness.
It works. How did you guys like my singing?
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing, especially those first two voice riffs there.
That was My Morning Jacket. The song was called First Light, and I chose it because he's talking about reincarnation, basically. So now, Carla and Jim, hello. How were your weeks?
Hey there, Gary. Our week was delightful. We had almost nothing to report, actually. That's the kind of week it was. I got together with my girlfriends today and had a gala round, and that was a very pleasant afternoon. And other than that, I've been trying to get adjusted to some medication that's supposed to make me better from the shingles. And Jim's been working his tail off out in this heat.
I have no
mowing
tail.
Lawns.
No tail left at all.
How about you, Gary? Anything to report?
Oh, I hadn't considered my week. I had a wonderful week working for this little-known organization called LL Research, and wonderful day working with Jim today. It actually wasn't too hot. It was in the low 80s. Humidity was low. Jim and I get to talk between jobs, and today he got the pleasure of hearing all about Ernest Shackleton's ill-fated voyage to the Antarctic from a book that I'm listening to while I'm cutting grass, which Jim called Endurance. So after every job, he would get an update about the tragedies that befall Shackleton's team about halfway through the book. So that's my week. Shall we move on to your opening riff?
Let's.
Okay, Carla's opening riff today comes in the form of two Q&As from two different sessions of the Law of One books, the first of which is session 68, question 17. The questioner says, I am interested as to how the first distortion applies to the negatively polarized entity misplacing the mind-body-spirit complex. Why is the negatively polarized entity followed to the place of negative time/space? Why would one of us freely follow the entity? Ra replies, I am Ra. The positive polarity sees love in all things. The negative polarity is clever. The second excerpt that Carla has chosen comes from session 78, question 25. The questioner says, then you are saying that as a result of the polarization in consciousness which has occurred later in the galactic evolution, the experiences are much more intense along the two paths. Are these experiences each independent of the other? Must there be must there be action across the potentiated difference between the positive and negative polarity, or is it possible to have this experience simply because of the single polarity? This is difficult to ask. I am Ra. We would agree. We shall attempt to pluck the gist of your query from the surrounding verbiage. The fourth and fifth entities are quite independent, the positive polarity functioning with no need of negative and vice versa. It is to be noted that in attempting to sway third density mind, body, spirit complexes and choosing polarity, there evolves a good bit of interaction between the two polarities. In sixth density, the density of unity, the positive and negative paths must needs take in each other. For all now must be seen as love light and light love. This is not difficult for the positive polarity, which sends love and light to all other selves. It is difficult enough for service to self polarized entities that at some point the negative polarity is abandoned.
Okay, thanks a lot, Gary.
Mm-hmm.
The questions that came in this week seem to be pretty heavily loaded towards talking about polarity in one way or another. And so I thought I would just talk a little bit about how polarity works. When you have a difference across a potentiated field, you have polarity. It's what makes your car go. It's what makes things work. The great, wonderful field of electric and electronics is based on this potentiated difference, so a difference over a potentiated space. And it is one of those things where if you try to track the reason for it, a child keeps on asking, and why is that? Well, you find yourself in the middle of a paradox. They don't know. Scientists do not know, basically, how electricity works. It just is a matter of observing how it works and trying to manipulate how it works in order to achieve results. And that's what we have today, is a whole bunch of very high-tech stuff which we use with great glee, thinking our scientists are very, very smart, and never realizing that they do not have the tools or wherewithal to explain the basic tenets of their way of life, which is to observe, assimilate, and move on, so that you basically observe all of the things that seem to be working and you move on them without ever understanding why it goes that way and not this way. But I thought that the first quote, Don was actually asking in that quote about a fifth density entity that was going all out to try to end my existence. And the scary thing about it was, when it started happening, that Don and I had created a character, Esmeralda Sweetwater, that had this happen to her, that she was going off to follow the villain of the piece, a negatively oriented magician or magus named Trostrick, into negative time space. Of course, we didn't have the words for that then, but you know, years later, to have this actually happen, it didn't ever happen, because the guys with the white hats figured out how not to make it happen, and I was working as hard as I could too, not to be swayed by things like despair and like that, because I was in a bad way physically. I was having a lot of trouble keeping any kind of weight. I was down to about 80 pounds for about 3 years. Between 80 and 85, I'd eat and eat, and I'd get it up to 85, and then I just couldn't stand look at food anymore for a while, and I went back down. So anyway, this was a tense moment for us, the three of us in the group, Jen, Don, and I. And we were just asking, you know, why should we be afraid that Carlo would follow this negative entity into negative time space? And he was saying very simply, very clearly, the positive polarity sees love in all things. The negative polarity is clever. And you can see this go down time and again in the annals of people fooling people, the big con, the little con, the big scam, the little scam, you know, all of these people that are wanting to get ahead. And someone says, well, here's how you get ahead. I'll take $2,000 of yours, and I'll make 19% interest on it in 3 days. And then you never see them again. But it's well to remember when you are trying to expand your positive polarity that you're not expanding yourself into a doormat. You're not expanding yourself into a person that can think of nothing but the great joy of doing service to others. You're a person who approaches service to others looking in the situation to find the Creator and then to move with the energy of the Creator towards the person or the situation, whatever comes first. I've had to encourage people time and again to become more than totally loving. There is another spoke or two in the wheel of the complete person that you attempt to be by sixth density, and that's that you want to be wise enough that your passion becomes compassion, that you are feeling for each other, but you are also looking for ways that are feasible in order to serve that person. They can be the difference between your hurting yourself and feeling all burned out and feeling this polarity business is ridiculous and I'm just going to have a good time, and discovering that service to others blossoms and blooms in so many ways for you. And you know, the more you look simply to empty yourself out and allow the Creator to speak through you and move through you, and have, as long as you are asking the Creator for that, the Creator's thoughts, I don't think you can go really wrong. I think that once you add to that enormous love that you have by your very nature, the awareness of love being a fragile thing, and the giving of it something to consider, so that your gift flows cleanly into that energy pattern and is perceived by that other entity as a good thing. The most obvious thing that people do that infringes on free will is that grunt, by the way, was my 12-pound cat that just jumped on my tummy and then jumped off. I wonder why. Where was I? let's see. You take... Where was I, Mick?
You were talking about the polarity that people need to be more than compassionate. They have to add some wisdom to their loving of others.
That's the basic point that I wanted to make. And also that you'll find that the more that you sense into the moment and sense into what a totally positively oriented person would be in that moment, the more you are moving into the dance with that person. So that it's good to find ways to share your truth that does not disturb the energy pattern of the person to whom you're speaking. The biggest mistake, there I go, I know where I was. The biggest mistake people make when they look at the raw material, or they might do it with Paramahansa Yogananda's material, or the Saints of the Middle East, that's a wonderful set of books, or the Wisdom of the Far East, or, you know, whatever book has totally turned you on. And you're full of it. You're just so thrilled by the things that you're able to think once you get this book, and you really want to share it. Don't. Try not to think in terms of sharing that. Try to think in terms of supporting and encouraging what the other person happens to be doing. And don't bring anything up about what you're thinking or what you're doing with the idea that you'll just give this person some advice. If the person hasn't asked for the advice, then you just need to be there for that person. Now, I've found that very hard in my life from time to time, because I'm a person that likes to solve things. I'm a solution maker. It's like, okay, give us 5 minutes and we'll work it out. And we usually do. You know, when you really want to work something out, you do work it out. But in truth, most people find it objectionable to be told what it is that they should think, or what, you know, you got to read this book or whatever. There's an instinctive defense mechanism that, you know, stops the energy between the two of you. So you don't want to do that. You just want to be there for that person, and you have no idea how important that is to your polarity. The more listening that you can do, the more silent prayer that you can offer, the better. Because by that, you are letting that person know that person is important to you just the way he is, and you have no criticism whatsoever. Okay, the second thing that I got Gary to read had to do with, must there be action across the potentiated difference between the positive and negative polarity, or is it possible to have this experience simply because of the single polarity? Well, Rod agrees that there has to be some kind of difference. Some kind of action across the potentiated difference. But he does note that you really need to have interaction with negative polarity in order to have some kind of catalyst with which to work. If everything goes absolutely beautifully all the time, then you're not in third density. It's very difficult to describe this, but it's an important thing to realize that, my gosh, you know, if we could do these things perfectly, we wouldn't be here. So it's okay to be human, and it's okay to fall on your face or fall on your tail or however you see yourself acting in terms of polarity, and just, you know, pick yourself up and try again, because that's the great thing about Ra's cosmology and philosophy, is that there's always a dawn after the dark night of sorrow. Okay, that's what I had to say about polarity, and before I go on, I just want to make sure that, Jim, do you have anything to add to that?
I guess just the first thing, or the only thing I would have to say, is that in that first instance where the negatively oriented entity was attempting to lure you into negative time-space, this is a very unique situation that you are in. It's not something that most people have to worry about at all in their lifetimes of seeking and serving. It was a situation in which you were attempting to be of service to others in a specific way, channeling those of the energies of Ra, so that you attracted this attention. So your advice to people was sometimes we need to add a little bit of wisdom to the compassion. And I would say, well, you know, that's a good thing. But in most cases, if people pursue their polarity as purely as possible and are entirely compassionate, they won't find themselves in a situation where that will cause them a problem. It's only in a very special case situation in which such as you were in that that could be a difficulty. And that would be my only comment on that.
Okay, Doug. How about you, Gary?
Earlier this week, I had taken your dictation as one of in your response to one of your IMU students, and
right.
You had touched on this topic of exercising discernment in selecting what to share, when to share, how to share it, and listening to the other person. And you constructed an analogy that really illustrated it that I liked, and you said that you may have a Niagara to share and the other person may only be able to receive a creek or a small creek or something like that. I thought it, you know, put the two in proportion and suggested to the giver of information that they tune into what the other person is receptive to and what they need. So that'd be my only addition.
Well, I think it's a great one. Okay, do we have any other callers or?
No.
We have to go to the ones who've written in.
Okay. The first comes from a Bring Forth member named Tenet. Never known how to pronounce the second word in his username. It looks like Nos, Noche, Nachos, N-O-S-C-E. It's a Tenet Nos, Latin means know thyself. So Tenet says in session 93 of the Ra material, Ra says, it is unlikely that there is a more pithy or eloquent description of the polarities of third density than service to others and service to self due to the nature of the mind-body-spirit complex's distortions towards perceiving concepts relating to philosophy in terms of ethics or activity. However, we might consider the polarities using slightly variant terms. In this way, a possible enrichment of the insight might be achieved for some. Then Ra later goes on to discuss polarity in terms of electromagnetic polarities, I believe. Tenet doesn't have the rest of that quote here. So, Tenet asks about that. He writes, in my humble opinion, the concept of STS versus STO has become more of a stumbling block than an aid for spiritual growth in more recent times. I think he's referring to the Bring Forth forums. This also appears to be the general sentiment of both Aaron and Quo in the recently published Aaron Quo dialogues. Yet I observe many seekers falling back to STS versus STO as the primary teaching to be discerned from the material. Question, in the 30-plus years following this transmission, have those of LL Research come up with anything more, quote, pithy or eloquent than considering the polarity solely in terms of STS and STO? If so, please share.
Okay. I don't think so. I don't think that. By the way, I think that was Don that was writing at the end of, it could have been Ra. Could have been wrong. Anyway, because of the way Don was, because of the fact that he was a scientist, and especially because of the fact that he was a physicist, who had run across the work of Dewey Larson, the fellow who stated that everything was motion and that manifestation took place the equation velocity equals space over time, space time. So he also wrote in the last book he wrote before he died that in the unseen realms, which is velocity equals time over space or time space, that that this was about ethics, and that it sort of pointed towards man as an ethical biological unit, which is a lot like a mind-body-spirit complex. Anyway, Don did not see that last book, but he was working from that first book and its two equations, velocity equals space-time and velocity equals time-space. Velocity would also be like vibration or movement and would fit in beautifully with the Law One teachings. And he was interested enough in the similarities between this system of physics and this extraterrestrial communications description of how things work, that he questioned along the lines of polarity using scientific terms. And so in that way, to that mind, that it would rather look at an equation and see the cleanness and the thriftiness of an equation than a bunch of words, it did seem to be absolutely the most pithy and eloquent description of how things work. So in my humble opinion, I have come up against nothing more. In fact, the book that I wrote last year, the first one of a hopeful series of three, I hope I live long enough and get back to work and do it, 101 is called The Choice. And it's that first choice towards service to others. And it changes you tremendously. So I don't think so. Jim, you have a right to say yay or nay on this also. So what do you think?
No, I think that service to others and service to self is really why we're here. I mean, this is the density of choice. And what we're trying to do is to decide our future progress along these lines of one polarity or the other. And we need to make a choice. So I don't see either one being a stumbling block for the seeker. I see that one or the other being the path towards further evolution into the fourth density and beyond for the seeker.
And I have a question for Gary.
Yes.
Gary, you probably know more than I would about what Tenet Nostra was really talking about, you know, that it tripped up people. Do you have any idea what he was saying? Could you put that in words that I would understand? I'm not aware that it has been such a difficulty.
I think he's referring to the way that people relate to and use the terms during the course of forum discussion, perhaps getting too hung up on the terms and forgetting the larger realities to which they point. I couldn't be too specific because I'm not sure exactly to what he's referring. But in general, I think that's the gist of it.
Okay.
I know you're soon going to say, Gary, what do you think? So I would just say that I concur with Jim about its centrality and importance at this stage of the game, at this particular density. It's, as Ra described, it's the axis upon which the creation turns. So it's a topic that really can't be exhausted as it applies to every corner of our experience in this particular density. So I think it's a worthwhile focus and a worthwhile and a efficacious vehicle for discussing the mechanisms of spiritual evolution and how it relates on a personal level and an abstract level and a philosophical level. So, and if I have not heard better terms and service to self and service to others, but if I could choose an alternative, I would say those who suck and those who do not.
Or those who suck and those who, perhaps.
Yeah, that would be adequate for me. So you ready for the next question, or did you want to discuss this one first? Okay. The next question comes from another Bring Forth member whose name is Shinar, with an apostrophe between the shin and the R. And he has a two-part question, and I'll skip to the second half of it because it's personal to Carla, and I think her response could be helpful. So he says to you, and three paragraphs. We all know that you have personally chosen to follow the path of Christianity and revere the Bible, but I suspect that there is much more to that decision than we know, given the fact that most Christians would not adhere to any of the things that you would speak of regarding spirituality. Obviously, your rationale around the Bible stems from understanding and speculative processes that are not typically Christian. What thinking causes you to remain in such close connection to the Christian Bible, and would you consider yourself to be more Catholic or more Protestant in your views? By Catholic, I mean more intrigued with the traditional aspects of the Bible than the actual doctrines taught within it. With loving curiosity, Shinar.
Thank you, Shinar, and thank you, Gary. An interesting question indeed. I view the Bible as a database. You got to choose one, I think, if you want to have a life in faith. At least that is what I thought at the age of 12 when I decided I was going to read a little bit of the Bible every day. And I have seldom missed that. I've missed it sometimes when I was in hospital or on trips and stuff and just was too flat, fatigued to reach for the Bible. But my husband and I have a morning offering and it plays a part. We always read from the Bible. We also always read from the Law of One. So there's another database I consider equally useful. But I chose the Christian Bible as my database because I grew up with it. And it's so much better to have something that you have understood from your very beginning so that you can work with it and play with it all of the whole time of your life. You have the maximum amount of time to work on spiritual principles. I just wanted to serve. I wanted to serve the Creator. I wanted to serve my Beloved. I'm heavily mystical in that, and I adore my Beloved, and I'm quite passionate about that. So, let's see. So I guess it's not typically Christian just to be cold and say, well, that's a database. It's as good as any. But I think it is as good as any. It is what people have thought about the Creator over a relatively long period of time. And different ways of viewing the Creator, definitely in the Old and the New Testament, and differences abound within both systems. But I read that, or I listen to the servant, you know, the readings in church, and think about that. I think it gives me, by the time I've gotten through with the Old Testament lesson, the New Testament lesson, and a psalm, I've gotten three things to work on that week. Sort of generally have a ties in between them, themes within them that will give me things to ponder and chew on. And so that's the reason that I've stuck with it all these years. I certainly would not recommend it for anybody that wanted to find the last word in what's true. But as Pontius Pilate said, what is truth? So I just, year after year, I hear you know, I hear those comfortable words over and over, and I don't consider that anything in the Bible is necessarily true, and I could care less. I really could care less. My Christianity is very personal, and, you know, my Jesus is very personal. I saw my Jesus in my magic forest when I was a little girl, and he looked into my eyes, and I knew what love was, and I follow him, and I follow the love in his eyes. That's so personal, you know, to me. No, I can't say, well, you know, just go to your magic forest and get him. That's not going to work. So I never preach, you know, Christianity. I never preach anything. And so the thinking that causes me to stay in such close contact with the Christian Bible is that this is where I started. It has given me tremendous epiphanies in my life. It has lifted me up at dark moments. It has given me friends in Christ. It has satisfied a deep need that I have to rejoice and be glad and be joyful. And, of course, with my singing, I adore singing the sacred repertoire. And I would miss it terribly if I couldn't do it anymore. And whether I am more Catholic or more Protestant in my views, let's see, by Catholic I mean more intrigued with the traditional aspects of the Bible. I'm not intrigued with either the traditional aspects of the Bible or the doctrines taught within it. I'm only using it as a database. And I know good and well that there may be other databases that could shine brighter. But this is the one where I started. And by the time I was 10, I was well aware of most of the Bible. And I've built on that decade by decade. And the ability that such a database gives you is that you keep going over it again. And it meets you at a different place in your journey. And just like the Law of One material does, it does that for me. It meets me where I am. I'm always on the road to Emmaus, if you want to use a Christian term. So there is my apologetic, Shinar, for what it's worth. Any questions, Gary?
So it sounds like you're saying that, and this is coming from me, that your love of and devotion to biblical scripture is an artifact of your having been raised with it. Had you been born in a Buddhist country, you may have a similar affinity for Buddhism.
That's right.
Okay.
I think you can draw the line at, you know, the fundamental type church that demands that you believe that everything is true, because I just have too much sense for that.
That you do. And a quick question for me, how I understand what you're saying in terms of it being a database and in terms of being a collection of what seekers before us have thought about the Creator, or seekers before this time have thought about the Creator. And it gives you a source of information, gives you a direction to chew over a spiritual thought. How do you specifically, I'm curious, relate to those portions of the Bible that you personally would consider negatively oriented? How do you process them? What do you think about them? To what end do you put them?
I just sort of give them the raspberries and say, well, that was definitely a bad Old Testament day. You know, I certainly don't have to like it, but there it is.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the world operates like that. How many times have you heard people react within the Old Testament's eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth? I mean, this is a legitimate entry into the way people think, just not all people and not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a database, you know, and I do think it covers the waterfront better than most. Of course, if I was a Buddhist and I had all those sutras and, you know, I would probably be so happy. I would be, you know, like an otter swimming upstream. It's just so much to play with, and they have wonderful and very mystical things. You can find mystics in any religion, and that's where you begin to see where oneness happens. Oneness happens on the mystical side, not on the side of people explaining dogma or, you know, rehearsing the tenets of their faith. Those are limiting, and people that use those and are comfortable within those are people who really want some kind of structure so that they know what is right and they know what is wrong and they know where they are, and they're never, ever wrong within the standpoint of their church. They learn what their church believes, and then they are perfect replicas of, you know, that. And so I would definitely say I'm probably more high church than low. But while the artifacts of the Christian faith make me comfortable because I'm very used to them, the cross, the paten, the chalice, the candles, the incense, all that stuff, I'm very, very comfortable with that, and I really feel the pull of that. I don't defend it as something that is intellectually viable. I simply say that these things are distortions that are pleasing to me. And that's pretty much what the Ra group says. Jim, do you happen to remember what the Ra said about that?
About?
That they would give me the accoutrement of my church because it made me more comfortable.
Yeah, that's why we used all of those in the sessions with Ra. Those were on the table at your head. And we always aligned them in a certain way so that their influence on you would be positively oriented to help you to go into the working with a sense of support, that you would have these symbols available to you. And throughout your life, you had come to associate them with a kind of a spiritual sustenance or food.
Yes.
That was really, it did feed you. And it gave you the energy, much like charging your battery, that allowed you to partake in the Ra contact. So I think that these things, these symbols, Ra chose specifically because they were a very integral part of your seeking for your entire life. And that they made up a great deal of who you are and who you were. And they were very necessary in order to continue on the journey of seeking, and specifically during the Ra contact, your journey of serving others. So I think those were chosen because it was so obvious to those of Ra, who, when they observed your life pattern, they saw what a part these symbols played. And if they had chosen a person from a Buddhist or a Taoist or a Hindu background, they would have chosen the symbols that were equally helpful to that person, and they would be much different symbols, very likely. Or in some cases, they could be the same. You know, they could be incense or candles that were helpful to them as well. But they were the food for your service.
Yeah.
So the first part of Shinar's question may have been indirectly responded to already in your discussion of different religious texts serving as a database. If you think it's been sufficiently answered, we can move on to another question. I'll ask it. He says, is it possible to briefly explain your thoughts around the idea that all religions are rooted in similar teachings that point to the One?
I do believe that to be true, and I even have a place in the book, The Choice, where I write down, you know, all these have in common, all these world religions have in common, and I think I chose to take not that all is one, but that we are each other, which is another way of saying that we are all one, but it's a golden rule, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Why? Because you are he and he is you and we are all together. Now, I always quote that wrong, but it's from a Beatles tune. And so That is the only apologetic that I would use, is simply to note that if all world religions have a mystical side that claims that golden rule and the you know, the reason behind it, then I think you have to say that all religions point, at least in their mystical aspect, towards all things being one.
Provided that, too, they're founded upon genuine, authentic spiritual experience or revelation, whereas some may be more mental, maybe a derivative of mental creations that aren't necessarily rooted in authentic spiritual experience. Not that we should go around judging other sources of spiritual insight, but that might be
We judge for ourselves.
Yeah,
okay, but we just don't pass that on to others as the gospel, or we should not.
So, thank you for that response to Shinar's question. Next question comes from a Bring Forth member named Siren, and Siren posted a series of questions that I think you've chewed through here and there during the course of the show. And one of those questions asks, what is spirit? A shuttle? Have you considered that both body and spirit are very similar in the sense that they both serve as vehicles of transportation? Could the body be a medium of exploration / experimentation for the mind thought to the more outer planes, space-time aspects of the Creator, and the spirit a shuttle for the inner planes, time-space?
I've found it. I'm shuffling my papers. This is not a particularly wonderful way to do it, but I have to find it. All right. Working on that and agreeing that body and spirit are very similar in that they both serve as vehicles of transportation. In fact, we call our bodies physical vehicles. And, you know, that's absolutely acceptable to me. They do definitely serve as vehicles of transportation. But could the body be a medium of exploration, experimentation for the mind, thought? Certainly. I think that in all of the senses, taking in everything from the way we eat to the way we make love to the way we make friends to the way we support our family or not, all of these things, we're basically riding a certain kind of vehicle, whether it's physical or mental or spiritual. And I guess my goal is always to remove myself from any clever apologetics or rationales about what it is I'm doing, and instead, if pressed and say, why are you doing this, I would need to be able to explain where my love had sent me and what my desire to tell the truth in a loving way had brought to me. So, yes, a spirit is definitely a shuttle. And Ra agrees. Here's session 80. Question 14, I don't intend to get too far ahead of my questioning process here. The positively or negatively polarized adept, then, is building a potential to draw us directly on the spirit for power. Is this correct? Ra says, it would be more proper to say that the adept is calling directly through the spirit to the universe for its power, for the spirit is a shuttle. The spiritual body energy field is a pathway or channel. When body and mind are receptive and open, then the spirit can become a functioning shuttle or communicator from the entity's individual energy of will upwards and from the streamings of the creative fire and wind downwards. The healing ability, like all others, what this instrument would call paranormal abilities, is effected by the opening of a pathway or shuttle into intelligent infinity. There are many upon your plane who have a random hole or gateway in their spirit energy field, sometimes created by the ingestion of chemicals such as what is intermodal call LSD, who are able randomly and without control to tap into energy sources. They may or may not be entities who wish to serve. The purpose of carefully and consciously opening this channel is to serve in a more dependable way, in a more commonplace or usual way, as seen by the distortion complex of the healer. To others, there may appear to be miracles. To the one who has carefully opened the door to intelligent infinity, this is ordinary, this is commonplace, this is as it should be. The life experience becomes somewhat transformed, and the great work goes on. I very much enjoyed reacquainting myself with this. And they're saying, yeah, the spirit is definitely a shuttle. So I think there's consensus all along. Jim, Gary, got any thoughts on that?
I like his description of the body being a vehicle for the mind, and then the spirit being a vehicle to, I guess, also for the mind to travel to the inner planes. The mind is seen as that portion of creation that is gathering experience, is attempting to know the creator, and attempting to know the self, attempting to know the creation. And it needs the vehicles by which it can travel into the outer realms of what we see as the creation in an everyday third density sense, and then travel into the inner realms, which get more and more close to the actual essence of the creator. So I think that was a great insight, and I enjoy that a great deal.
And nothing to add from me.
I'm shocked.
I'm not much of an opinion offerer myself. So we have 8 minutes, 15 seconds. And actually, you know, we'll stop 3 minutes before the show, so we have 5 minutes. The next one I was going to ask is rather substantial. So let's see if I can dig a shorter one from Siren. How about this? He says, expanding upon the previous question, that's the one that I just asked, what is the mind then? Could it be the interconnector, the mediator in between the outer slash lower and inner slash higher? Actually, Jim may have addressed this. Have any thoughts on that one, Carla?
Well, I found in session 92 that had been addressed to some extent. The questioner asked, are all activities that the entity has from the state of infancy a function of the potentiator of the mind? Ra says, well, firstly, although the functions of the mind are indeed paramount over those of the body being the creature of the mind, certainly not all actions of a mind-body-spirit complex could be seen to be due to the potentiating qualities of the mind complex alone, as that body, and in some cases that spirit, also potentiates action. Secondly, as the mind-body-spirit complex becomes aware of the process of spiritual evolution, more and more of the activities of the mind and body which precipitate activity are caused by those portions of the mind-body-spirit complex which are articulated by the archetypes of transformation. So Ra here is saying that you never know when spirit is going to call. You never know when you may fall into the dark night of the soul and become suddenly aware of reality and everything in a totally different way because of that incredible experience. So you cannot simply arrange all this neatly in a pattern. You have to allow for the almost random striking of synchronicity, I guess you'd say, and one angel or another that is loving you and wanting to help you, sort of nudging something into your path so that you can see it and maybe be changed by it or think about it or whatever. Secondly, in session 90, question 28, Don asks, what I'm really asking is what percentage of a part, roughly, are those responsible for? And Ross says, we ask again that you consider that the archetypal mind is a part of the deep mind. There are several portions to this mind. The mind may serve as a resource. To call the archetypical mind the foundation of experience is to oversimplify the activities of the mind-body complex, mind-body-spirit complex. To work with your query as to percentages is therefore enough misleading in any form of direct answer that we would ask that you re-question. And he left it at that. No, Rod did not go further than that. Gary, does that bring you up to date? Does anybody have a closing comment?
No closing comment, and you have 1 minute 45 seconds remaining. So how about you riff on why Ra calls the one original thought the one original thought? Why is it called a thought, Siren asks?
Okay. Well, it's called a thought because of former etymology. In the Greek system, especially the Platonic system, thoughts were those, you know, idealized beings that were the ideals, and those were the logos, thought. And that thought was different than mere thoughts. It was the one original thought. The Greek philosophers of 400 years before Christ truly and honestly believed that everything was a thought. I remember Plato's analogy of the cave. We don't get any closer to reality than seeing our shadows on the wall, illuminated by the dancing fire of you know, the passion play of life. So I think that's the reason that the logos is used in that way, the one great original logos, the one thought of love.
Yeah, come to think of it, I recall the excerpt from the Law of One where Ra says something about infinity discerned a concept. That concept was manyness or the finite or free will, one or the other, but concept being the upper operative word there. I mean, all of this manifest universe, whether physical or non-physical, is the result of a concept, of a thought.
Yes.
So that brings us to 2 minutes 45 seconds remaining. Thank you, Jim and Carla, both, for this In the Now Q&A show. I will sign off with our outro and say
that... love to everybody.
You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. If you have enjoyed this show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.org, the archive website, and bringforth.org, the community website. Thanks so much for listening in, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for Carla before the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org. Navigate to the forum titled Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert and submit a post to the thread similarly titled Discussion/Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Alternatively, you can submit a private question to the show's regular host, Monica Leal, at magicalmoons@gmail.com. Magical Moons is spelled Mike Alpha Golf India Charlie Kilo Alpha Lima Mike Oscar November Sierra. I remembered my phonetic alphabet there. Have a wonderful week. Monica will be back asking Carla your questions next Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern, GMT-5. We'll talk to you then.